Thank you for joining us for today's podcast, Icons of Our Industry. And today we have with us Alice Ayers, who's the President and Chief Executive Officer for Association for Healthcare Philanthropy. She has been with them, I guess, since 2018, Alice, something like that.
That's right. Yep, a little over 2 years.
Alice is incredibly bright and engaging in conversation. In fact, we ran a little bit long just chatting a few minutes ago. But Alice has really brought AHP, I think, to a new level, and especially during the time of COVID-19, AHP has just really risen as a leader. And so, Alice, we appreciate so much your leadership, and we're thankful that you're on our call today.
Well, thank you for having me, Eddie. I really appreciate it, and I'm excited. I had took a look at all of the people that you've had on, and they certainly are icons. I feel humbled to be part of this group, so thank you.
Well, it's our pleasure and you belong. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and I'm just curious to hear your answers. What have you learned in your career that's really made a difference?
So there are lots of things, but I think, as you probably know, I've worked in a lot of different types of organizations, from startups to major corporations like Kraft Foods and more recently the advisory board company. And I think what I've taken from all of those experiences is that a successful organization has to find a balance between being agile and being good at long-term planning. So the startups I've worked for are relentless about being agile, which makes sense because you're already learning new things about your customers sort of on a daily basis. While some of those larger organizations are always thinking about the long-term effect and implication that even a small risk might take and might create. And so I found that sort of each of those are important, but taken by themselves, they can create blinders to a more balanced approach, which is more of a careful blend of being agile and also being able to think about the long term, which is what I'm trying to achieve at AHP. And as a leader, I think you have to understand your own tolerance for risk and your own tolerance for change, and then kind of assess whether that's in line with the organization's levels of tolerance for those things as well. And I've been fortunate that AHP, the volunteer leadership, the board, and others were really ready for a thoughtful change, since I think my tendency tends to lean toward risk seeking rather than risk aversion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, especially as we're all facing COVID-19, I feel like that balance is really important right now. We were just talking a minute ago about how, you know, in March, it was like the whole world just changed dramatically. And we were thrust into important short-term thinking and doing. Sort of, you know, at first we all thought this might be over in a couple of weeks or maybe a month or two. And so we just had to do what we had to do in order to continue to make things work, whether that was, you know, working from home, pivoting to virtual events, virtual donor visits, WebEx meetings with clinical and hospital leadership, all of our members and AHP as well. We're just trying to figure out how to try new things and succeed fast or fail fast so that we could continue to do the work that we needed to do. But now we're in month six and with no real end in sight. And I feel like it's time for all of us to sort of sit back and assess how we navigate all of this from a sort of a long-term perspective, what changes need to be made to our, I don't know, our strategic plans or our annual goals or the way that we're interacting with donors, and to take what we've learned that didn't work and then also looked at, you know, so that we don't do that anymore, but also take the changes that we made that were better than the old way of doing things and making those permanent. And, you know, I'm doing this at AHP. We've done a ton of pivoting, as you said, in the last several months. We've done virtual meetings and conferences where we had never done them before. We did the Virtual Institute instead of being in Madison. We're all working from home, have been since March. And so we've done a lot of that, but I'm finding that I need now, and in fact, I'm going to take sort of a mini timeout next week from the day-to-day to really sit with the path forward for the next several years. It's so hard. I mean, we went through budgeting. That was incredibly difficult because it's just hard to, you know, none of us have a crystal ball. None of us know what's coming. But I think with some thoughtful planning and some careful risk assessment and some contingency planning, I feel like we will continue to be in a great place no matter what, either 2020 or I'm almost afraid to say it, but 2021 throws that in the mix. So it's a balance, you know. I think we've all got to find that balance.
Well, you know, you sat in a seat that you have the opportunity to look across the country. Have you seen the impact of COVID-19 different in different regions, or has it been pretty consistent throughout the country? Or what have you seen from your vantage point?
I think in terms of fundraising, the differences have to do with some basic fundamentals that were either in place or weren't. And so the first thing I think about is whether or not the hospital leadership had a real understanding of the importance of philanthropy and had sort of built a culture of philanthropy. Yes. For those organizations where that was the case, I feel like they jumped into donor stewardship. They jumped into asking donors for help and inviting them to be part of the hard work of caring for COVID patients and also, you know, continuing to try to care for all of the other aspects of healthcare that they had always cared about in the past. For others, you know, that fissure that some hospital leadership didn't understand how important philanthropy could be meant that people were told by hospitals that they really shouldn't go out and talk to donors, or they shouldn't talk about the needs of the hospital right now because they didn't want to be seen as needing in the midst of a crisis. And so, you know, I think those who had that relationship and had the understanding of how important philanthropy is really doubled down. They understood that it was a diverse revenue stream, that was something that might actually help stem some of the losses from elective procedures and you know, sort of regular chronic care. And then, you know, just watching the ways in which they fundraisers have figured out how to connect with donors in truly meaningful ways. You know, lots of them have done things like bring clinical and hospital leadership to a virtual meeting of donors because donors are just hungry right now for what is going on, what is the truth, and they look to healthcare to give it. There was a study done by Edelman that I saw pretty recently. I'm not going to remember the numbers, but it was pretty clear that of all of the places that people had to go for information, news outlets, you know, government entities, healthcare was the one they trusted by leaps and bounds above all the others. And so I think we're in a position to really make a big difference for people in their own lives and donors in their own lives. And to invite them to make a big difference in the work that we're doing. So, you know, I think it's more about the differences are more or less geographic and less even system versus small hospital foundation, and more just about, you know, the culture that's been built.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to keep you a little bit longer than I promised you, so don't be angry.
I love it.
But I have,
but
I have one more question I want to ask you. And this is a hard question. It's kind of the naughty question, but what mistake have you made in your career and what did you learn from it?
So I had a hint that you might ask this question and I spent a lot of time thinking about it. And I honestly, I think the big one is that I, like many, many other women and men too, but many women in particular, felt my fair share of imposter syndrome, especially early in my career. And that's a feeling that at any moment, someone is going to realize that you're not qualified to do what you're doing, like you've sort of snuck your way into the role that you're in rather than earned it. And when I say that out loud, lots of people laugh at me and say, oh, you know, come on, Alice, you went to Princeton, you have a Kellogg MBA, give me a break, right? And yet I still felt it. And so for me, the mistake, I think, in feeling it was that it closed me off to soliciting good, helpful feedback and held me back from jumping into new or bigger opportunities. And I'm glad to say that as I've gotten older, I've sort of relaxed into knowing what I know and knowing what I don't know and asking questions and getting good feedback from people and sort of being open about where my own gaps of knowledge or understanding are. And that's increased my ability to grow and to learn as a leader and as a person. And it's also I think allowed me to bring sort of a more authentic whole self to the roles that I've taken. So I try, as I mentor people, and especially younger women, I encourage them to recognize their own tendencies toward imposter syndrome in the hopes that I can help them get to where I am now, which is, you know, sort of more comfortable in the things that I've been able to accomplish. And I'm now also, you know, relentless in seeking feedback and advice. And, you know, I think of those as gifts that I'm grateful to AHP's members for giving us and engaging with me and sometimes some tough conversations about what we're doing not so well so that we can, as an association, serve the members better. So, you know, it's nice to be in a place where I feel now like, you know, I'm able to own the things I don't know and ask for help in ways that perhaps I might not have when I was younger.
Boy, that is insightful wisdom. I hope people are listening.
Thank you.
Because that's easy to do, and it's easy for anyone to do. It depends on where they come from and their background, but it's also gender specific too. So I really appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was helpful, Alice.
Good. I'm glad. It always startles me. You know, I see all of these incredibly accomplished, remarkable, often younger women in my universe. And, you know, then they'll sort of whisper, you know, when do you stop worrying about whether or not you belong? And I sort of feel that earlier version of me and realize that there are lots of things that we can all do to help all of us feel more like we belong where we are.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative for you mentioning that. That's something we've not heard before. Alice, you're a great leader for AHP. We appreciate you. We hope that you have a long, long term there, and that you keep helping our association improve and grow, and I believe you will. You're a great leader.
Thank you. It is truly a pleasure. And I appreciate the time with you, Eddie, as always. Thank you so much.
Well, we've had a chance today to hear from Alice Ayers, who is the president and CEO of AHP. Alice is a tremendous gift to all of us, whether you're in the industry of healthcare or not. She's a great leader. And any chance you have, any opportunity you have to hear her speak or read something she's written, you ought to take advantage. Alice, thank you. Everyone, thank you for joining us on our podcast today. We'll talk to you again with another icon from our industry.